What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The U.S. will avert default as the Senate sends a deal to raise the debt limit to the White House.
So, of course, at the last minute, policymakers in Washington have managed to get a deal together. But the fact that we had to go through this elaborate process, it chips away a little bit at some of that U.S. credibility.
Plus, Washington floats nuclear arms control talks with Russia, and Boeing's space ambitions hit yet another snag. It's Friday, June 2nd. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. And we begin in Washington, D.C.
On this vote, the yeas are 63, the nays are 36. The 60-vote threshold having been achieved, the bill is passed.
That is the sound of the Senate passing the deal to raise the U.S. debt ceiling and avoid a catastrophic default. The quick turnaround vote reflects support from both Democrats and Republicans, with backers saying that the need to raise the nation's borrowing limit outweighed concern about provisions that were related to military and domestic spending, as well as energy policy. Here was Senate Majority Leader, Democrat Chuck Schumer.
This demanded a bipartisan solution. We knew we'd need to come together for a solution like the one that passed tonight. And so I'm happy to stand here passing this critical legislation to support our families, preserve vital programs, and most importantly, avoid catastrophic default.
Senate Minority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell said that the deal moves Republican priorities in the right direction.
The Speaker's agreement cuts domestic discretionary spending while increasing support for veterans and the armed forces. It locks in promising reforms to infrastructure permitting. It claws back unspent COVID emergency funds. It slashes bloated spending at the IRS.
The measure now goes to President Biden for his signature, with several days to spare before Monday, when the Treasury Department had said that the U.S. government will run out of money to pay all of its bills. And with us now to break down the significance of last night's activity in Washington is Richard Portis, a professor of economics and the academic director at the London Business School. Richard, welcome to What's News. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
A lot of people were expecting the Senate to agree on a debt deal eventually, but perhaps not as quickly as they did. Maybe a vote occurring over the weekend, but it all happened overnight. What does that tell us, that senators got this done as quickly as they did?
You're absolutely right. When I got up this morning, London time, at 6 o'clock and looked at the papers, the first thing I saw was debt deal expected, or debt vote expected over the weekend or on Monday itself. And I said, uh-oh. And then the next story I read was that the debt deal had been passed, but there were 36 votes against it in the Senate, and there were quite a lot of votes against it in the House, and not just from the Freedom Caucus, who had vigorously protested the bill, but from a range of some Democrats, as well as some more moderate members of the Republican Caucus. So that there was significant opposition, and in a way that, to me, I still think is very surprising, because it would have been catastrophic.
Richard, now that this deal has been approved and the immediate risk of a default is off the table, let's turn to the way government spending is going to change as a result of this legislation. How does this bill meaningfully change priorities going forward?
I think it's very marginal, honestly. The politicians will spin it whichever way they like, but the actual cuts in the bill, as far as I can see, they are not deep cuts. They have symbolic significance to many. And when you come to a major component of discretionary spending, namely military spending, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, Mr. McConnell, has said already that if it comes to a need to increase military spending, well, that'll happen, right? Regardless of whatever constraints are imposed by this bill.
We've heard from some senators, including Democrat Patty Murray, the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, who's called for the debt ceiling to be scrapped altogether. Is it possible this is the last time we are going to have this debt ceiling debate? Are we just going to be back here again pretty soon?
We'll be back here again in 2025, unless the debt ceiling is thrown out. And you will recall, Janet Yellen said very clearly in the autumn that while the Democrats had a majority in both houses, that they should vote to abrogate this debt ceiling. And she was ignored. What then you do about the trajectory of government debt and deficits is another matter.
Richard Portis is a professor of economics and the academic director at the London Business School. Richard, appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much for breaking this down.
Thank you for asking me.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
So the U.S. debt deal is ready for President Biden's signature, which sounds like good news heading into the final trading day of the week. And Wall Street Journal Deputy Finance Editor Quinton Webb joins me now with a look at how markets are reacting to the developments out of Washington. Quinton, major U.S. indices jumped yesterday as investors cheered on the progress toward a deal to avoid a default. Now that we've got one in hand, should we expect more of that today?
Well, potentially. We are seeing some sort of small moves upwards in US stock futures. But I think the debt ceiling issue was one where there was more downside than upside, if you like. The working assumption was that a deal of some sort will be reached just in time eventually. And so there was much more potential for disruption if there was no deal, if there was a default, then there is potential for a big rally on a deal. At the margin, of course, this is good for risk sentiment. It's good for the treasury market, of course, which avoids that disruption. And it probably is good for kind of global markets as well.
And Quinton, you already mentioned some positive effects of last night's news for treasury markets, for overall risk sentiment. How else should we expect the market to react to a default being removed from the list of looming economic risks?
I think longer term, there is this issue about the US policymaking process. So, for instance, recently, Fitch Ratings warned that it could cut the top AAA credit rating of the United States. And it talked there about partisanship and about a deterioration in governance. So, of course, at the last minute, policymakers in Washington have managed to get a deal together. But the fact that we had to go through this elaborate process, I think, is of concern to investors. Now, that's not to say that the US will lose its status as one of the preeminent safe havens or that the dollar will lose its status as the world's major reserve currency. But at the margin, it chips away a little bit at some of that US credibility.
And there's more that investors are looking at today. This is obviously the big story of the day, but there is more that investors are watching in the coming hours even.
To be sure. So today we have the jobs report, the monthly non-farm payrolls report, and that is a big event often for markets. And at the moment, it's an important issue because there's this live debate about how much further the Federal Reserve needs to go and whether policymakers will raise rates again later this month. The thinking at the moment is that they are likely not to. And if this report doesn't come in super hot, that will strengthen the case for at least a pause and then maybe rate rises later in the summer. So that will be scrutinized very closely. And then, of course, the other big narrative that's driving the market at the moment is the potentially huge disruption that artificial intelligence could wreak and how that is kind of very positive for stocks like Nvidia. So we have a few other things in the mix as well as the debt ceiling that are captivating investors.
That was Wall Street Journal Deputy Finance Editor Quinton Webb. Quinton, thanks as always for the update.
Thanks so much.
In other news moving the world today, the Biden administration is preparing to begin talks with Moscow on steps to limit nuclear arms after the New START treaty expires in February 2026. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan is today expected to say that the U.S. is open to a dialogue with Moscow without preconditions. That comes after Russia earlier this year said it was suspending its participation in the New START treaty. And in response, the Biden administration said it would no longer exchange key data on its strategic forces, including updates on its missile and bomber locations. That said, Moscow plans to observe the limits on the number of strategic warheads that can be deployed under the accord until it expires in order to maintain, quote, stability in the nuclear missile area. ExxonMobil and Chevron are nearing a deal with Algeria that would allow the U.S. energy giants to drill for the first time in the gas-rich North African nation. According to the Algerian energy minister and people familiar with the discussions, agreements could be complete by the end of the year. Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dalton has insight into the negotiations and says that the deal could be especially crucial for Europe's supply of natural gas.
This would be the first time that ExxonMobil and Chevron have set up in Algeria to drill primarily for natural gas, and they have much more resources to produce principally natural gas, and Chevron and Exxon have a lot of experience producing shale gas. The Algerian energy minister told me that they are principally focused on conventional gas for the moment. Shale gas is something that would be in the future. Algeria is a huge nation and it's got a huge hydrocarbon territory. Now, the appeal of Algeria is that it has pipeline connections to Europe that would allow companies to get easy access to the European market. There's now a big commercial opportunity in Europe for energy companies because of the war in Ukraine and because Russia has been largely cut out of the market.
The California State Assembly has passed a bill requiring tech companies to pay media outlets a usage fee for news articles that are posted on their social media platforms. The bill's author has said that the effort is aimed at keeping local news afloat while they bear the costs of gathering and reporting the news, though Journal reporter Christine Myduk says the legislation could have unintended consequences should it go into effect.
It's unclear how other tech firms will respond to this, but on Wednesday, Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, threatened to pull all news stories from its platforms if the bill's passed. A spokesman for Meta told us that that would mean users in California wouldn't be able to read, post, or share news articles on Instagram or their Facebook news feeds. Now that the bill has passed the state assembly, it'll head to the state senate next. The deadline to pass all bills in the California legislature is September 14th.
We are exclusively reporting that auto safety regulators are failing to meet their own targets for completing investigations into defects that could put drivers at risk. That is according to a U.S. government audit that found that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA, has spent 8 years investigating airbag inflators that could explode and injure people. A period that far exceeds its long-standing guidelines of completing probes in a year or less. The audit said that the lack of timely investigations could limit NHTSA's ability to respond to rapidly evolving or serious auto safety risks, and it recommended that NHTSA implement a plan for meeting its targets. NHTSA said it had already implemented most of the watchdog's recommendations and was working to identify safety issues more quickly. And Boeing is not cleared for launch. In the latest setback for its space business, the company has postponed a long-awaited astronaut flight after identifying new safety issues on its Starliner spacecraft. Officials at Boeing and NASA said that flammable tape Boeing used on Starliner, as well as an issue with its parachute system, prompted the delay of a flight to the International Space Station, which had been planned for next month. A Boeing official overseeing Starliner declined to specify when the company could try to fly astronauts aboard the craft. And finally, shouldering another person's baggage can be a heavy lift. Airlines, airports, and contractors let go of hundreds of thousands of workers, including literal baggage handlers, when the pandemic all but halted air travel. And now they're struggling to hire them back. Journal aviation correspondent Ben Katz says that in addition to upping pay, companies are getting creative as they try and find workers who are willing to lug around your luggage.
They're trying to offer these interesting incentives to try and get people back into the job to fill those roles. They're offering things like redesigning their uniforms, a brand new uniform. Some of the companies go out and they offer ice cream on the tarmac to workers on hot days. And the thing is here is what's so critical about it is that they're trying to make the job more appealing. They're also trying to do something about retention, because this is what they've discovered is a lot of people who used to work in the industry left the industry and they don't want to come back. They've moved on since the pandemic, and new people arrive and they go, hey, you know what? The conditions here aren't really fantastic. We want a slightly better gig. We want some benefits. We want some incentives. And really, so what we're seeing kind of across the industry is more of these incentives and the everyday experience that I think that companies are really trying to improve, make the job easier, keep staff happier, and attract new ones.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.